Blog Talk Radio.
I thank it for me.
Yes, sir.
Ring bang da da da, dang da da da.
Tell me,
a revolution. Yeah. I'm on fire for revolution. Ring dang da da da, dang da da da. A revolution. Yeah. Rasta tight up that revolution. Dang da da da, dang da da da.
Tell me.
Where people don't come out and them a make big speech, but poor people the food not reach. I man have to wonder how them really sleep. Them living in the pool while the poor are feel the heat. Red country, why it's red country, why? The ghetto part of town, you ain't nothing but a victim. We're just trapped in a political system. There ain't no one to tell it alone. If you hit the big man a punch, shot them, broke your bone with stone. Why? So a revolution, yeah. I'm on site a revolution coming in a Babylon land. A revolution. Of government, what is your aim? Where is the plan? Where is the future for the younger generation? If there's no light at the end of the tunnel, well, don't you so I go red like hell. For man, the peas are cooked, but the rice can't swell. For no more big speech, time to come action. Crime and the violence rampant in our nation. People say it's because of suffering. There's got to be a revolution, yeah. What a hot a revolution, wriggling in a Babylon land, yeah. A revolution, yeah. Guns, knives and cutlass revolution. Dang da da dang, dang da da dang. All you boss leaders, I brand you as traitors. Nothing but whoremongers, idol worshippers, them assassins. Yo, you better come down off of your pumps and try to taking poor people for a joyride. Cause all your teeth is to divide and rule, and I use the people then with your political tools, your fool. Sure. Cause a revolution, yeah. The poor boy to see the revolution. Ring dang da da ding, dang da da ding. A revolution, yeah. What a hot a revolution. Ding da dang da dang da dang. No matter how them a come out and a skin off them teeth. Yet the poor man, the food not reach. Tell them all to practice what they preach. Cause I don't want to see them all a plaguing speech. Whoa, cause a revolution, yeah. I'm on site for revolution. Ring dang da da dang da da. A revolution.
Greetings and welcome to the Chef Rob Show here at Blog Talk Radio. Man, I think I lost something. But anyway, yeah, I'm going to finish playing that Claude Anderson thing there. I'm going to jump into it. Someone else told me they'd call in and give their views. So I'm kind of waiting, so I'm going to get in a little bit more time and play a couple more tracks because he wanted to chime in. But if he doesn't, okay, we're going to move on. You know, just got to do that. Okay.
Oh, my God. You're
tell me, say you have something to tell me. Now you see me right now, please tell me. You can't deny my love. You can't deny my love. Sexy Aitania, something for me.
Moment of honesty. Someone's gotta take the lead tonight. Is it gonna be?
Make sure.
I'm gonna sit right here and tell you what comes to me.
Oh, get back to the basics. I want to get back to loving.
Get back to hugging.
Get back to caring.
Get back to sharing.
Get back to understanding
everything we do.
Get back to even teaching.
Teach me, please.
Get back to loving your woman.
Get back to loving your man.
Get back to cooking for your man.
Whenever you hungry, baby.
Change it.
African Americans, or so-called Negro. One of the reasons that it is bad for us to continue to just refer to ourselves as so-called Negro, that's negative. When we say so-called Negro, that's pointing out what we aren't, but it isn't telling us what we are. We are African, and we happen to be in America. We're not American. We are people who formerly were Africans who were kidnapped and brought to America. Our forefathers weren't the pilgrims. We didn't land on Plymouth Rock. The rock was landed on us. We were brought here against our will. We were not brought here to be made citizens. We were not brought here to enjoy the constitutional gifts that they speak so beautifully about today. And because we weren't brought here to be made citizens today, now that we've become awakened to some degree and we begin to ask for those things which they say are supposedly for Americans, they look upon us with hostility and unfriendliness. So our unwanted presence, the fact that we are unwanted, is becoming magnified in all of America's preachments today.
And for that reason, you see, Ted Turner and Donald Trump can go bankrupt, become a millionaire, go bankrupt, become a millionaire over and over again. They're making a difference. A black person, if he ever comes to me there one time, you're going to hold him because he never do it twice. Because, see, a black person is born with zero. Why is he born with zero? When a white child comes in with 87%, a black child comes in with zero. Because it's called inherited wealth. I just told you everything is locked into the white culture. And so a black child cannot inherit anything because what we've been focusing on. We have been dealing with symptoms and not problems. For all these years, we talk about how can a black kid cannot inherit food stamps. He can inherit welfare. He can inherit public housing. He cannot inherit a job. So he comes in at zero. He cannot compete against a white child because as parents, you're letting them down. You're not giving your child a fair break. He can't compete. And I don't care how much you go out and scream at these black kids about what they should be doing. They are not crazy. You're not giving them any tools. You're trying to motivate kids. You cannot motivate a child to be successful. Motivation only means giving people interest in doing something. What you got to do, working with Dr. Price, you got to empower these young people. There's a difference between motivating people and empowering. I see all these blacks running out of cars, so I'm a motivational speaker. That's a pimp and a hustler. You don't motivate black folk, you empower them. Now, here's the difference between motivation and power. I can motivate everybody in this auditorium this morning to want to go to Europe and lay on the beach and enjoy a good life, lay at the hotel and eat well. I can motivate you. But if I don't give you the money, the tools, y'all understand what I'm saying? And I don't give you the tools, the ship, the boat, the airplane, the hotel, I'm playing games. Am I not? And that's what they keep doing with black folk. They always want to motivate black folk rather than empower them. And what I talk about all the time all this country, and I'm going to work with Dr. Spicer, is to give you those tools. You give black folk the tools, and they'll do the job. Okay? I'm watching the clock. I don't know how much time I've spent so far. Am I fine? 47 minutes? Okay. I got 47 minutes. Let me wrap it up then. So give them the tools. They can be successful. But they won't always want to motivate blacks. And that's why we came out of slavery. What they did, they gave blacks what I call non-economic emancipation. Then we came out of Jim Crow, and they gave us non-economic integration. See, money never entered the picture. Why didn't it enter the picture? Because here's why it's important for you all to remember this. Because at the Civil War, that was a dividing line. That was the first time that land became more important than a black slave. Okay? And that's why you all didn't get the 40 acres and the mule. Okay? Because that was the first time when they said nobody could ever own slaves anymore, then the value jumped from a slave to land. And they said, then blacks won't get any. You never got your 40 acres of mule. That means you were vulnerable. You couldn't compete. You had no place to go. You were homeless, penniless, and you suffered 260 years of planned ignorance, so you couldn't do anything. And so then the second compromise was committed. Immediately after the Civil War was over, the North then sold blacks out. They looked at the poor whites in the South and said, well, now that we've taken all the wealth out of the South, because what we really wanted to do, what we were fighting the Civil War over, was to take the wealth from the South and move it to the North. And now that we got the wealth, you all can have the South again, and you can have those blacks. And so immediately in 1866, the South passed what's called the Black Code. The Black Codes were nothing but the same code what I told you earlier in 1705 called the Slave Code. So it re-enslaved black folks. And you went back into second slavery that they called Jim Crowism. Now, what was the effect of Jim Crowism? Let me show you. Up at that point in time, black folk were the primary labor force in the United States because nobody else wanted to work. All whites in America want to be the genteel class. They want to be the lazy class. They want to be able to be the aristocrat. They didn't want to work. They didn't want to get their hands dirty. But what they had done, though, by that time, black folk were the caulkers, the mechanics, the bricklayers, the plumbers. Blacks made up almost 50 to 60% of all the workers in the factories, in the tobacco factories, and the iron factories, and the mines in the East. In the South alone, after the Civil War, according to the 1865 census, that out of 120,000 artisans mean educated or skilled people in the South, people who could do the job, the work, out of 120,000, 100,000 were black. About 1867, it got tricky. Now that the war is over, America then started their little game with the immigrants again. So between 1866 and 1880, they brought in 12 million European immigrants into America. And guess what happened to poor blacks again? They got booted out of those positions. They got kicked out. In the North, they created something called UNIONS, unions. They created unions and kicked blacks out of all those jobs that I told you about as mechanics and plumbers and engineers and bricklayers and all this kind of stuff. They kicked them out and started unions. Then they put a clause in it's a white-only union. They kept blacks out of jobs up until the 1960s, almost 100 years, just shut them out. They did the same thing in the South. They created what's called farmer alliances. Even though 55 to 60% of all the farmers in the South were black, they created farmer alliances so black folks could not raise their products and sell their products and get to market. That's why the black farmers were crying over in Tuskegee. said nobody. Matter of fact, I just made front pages of the Washington Post. What day was it? Thursday. Front page of Washington, what happened to the black farmers? Like today. They can't raise anything. They can't raise their crops. If they raise, they don't have a distribution system. They don't have a market. Because they don't have a community. Nobody can get the crops from Tuskegee from the south to New York City. Because, see, the whites won't let you use their system to do it. Unless they control it, manipulate it, and they get the profit and advantage. So those poor farmers down there are losing their land at twice, or three, I mean, three times the rate of white farmers. In 1920, we had 20 billion acres of land, 20 million acres of farmland in the United States belonged to blacks. It's down to less than about 400,000 acres now. You're going out of existence. And as the food crop moves further and further away from black folk into the hands of two or three major corporations, you're in serious trouble. Because 78% of all the blacks in America now live in 10 large cities. You got a 10-day food supply. If somebody wanted to, they can starve all the blacks in America to death in less than 2 weeks. Your farm, you're losing your farmlands and everything else. Nobody want to make an issue out of it. Washington Post had the front pages saying the black farmers are almost gone. But anyhow, so what happened then after the Civil War? The immigrants came in, bumped blacks out, froze them out. Some people say, well, black folk can compete if we educate them. Wrong. Didn't work. When black folk came out of slavery in 1866, they had a 98% illiteracy rate. That means only 2% of the blacks in the United States could read and write in 1860. But by 1900, blacks reduced their illiteracy rate from 98% down to 40%. Blacks learned faster than all those white immigrants who came into America. Blacks cut their illiteracy rate faster than all the European immigrants. When I went back and did analysis on job mobility and on money and wealth, guess what happened? The whites that came in, they went up, blacks went down, which means education was not the factor. So you tell a child to get an education, you don't deal with racism, it won't do any good. And I got blacks all over the country telling me, so Dr. Anson, it's time for black folks to put racism behind them. Black people cannot put racism behind you because you didn't put it in front of yourself. You don't have the power to put anything behind you. And the most dangerous thing you can do is to start talking about cutting yourself away from your history and the fact of racism. Because let me tell you all why. And remember this. There's only three ways we could have possibly gotten into our dilemma. Either we were where we are because God wished it up here, or because we are genetically inferior down here, or because somebody's been playing games in social engineering. One of those three. Now, I don't believe God wished black folk to be in this dilemma. But yet, the dominant white society taught that and used their churches from 1600 up until 1860 to say that God wished it. The blacks somehow were smited. Being an offshoot of Hamlet. Remember that? They used the Bible to teach that black folk were inferior and that you were justifiably slaves. Then from 1860s up until present day, they've been using genetics. That's why you got a book all called The Bell Curve. Saying that you're genetically inferior. That's why you're in your dilemma. And what I tell black folks, both of those are tales. You are where you are because you've been socially engineered. The last thing. People have been playing games with you, manipulating the circumstances, controlling you. And if somebody has socially engineered you into your dilemma, the only way you're going to get out is from somebody that takes the responsibility of what? Socially engineering you out. And that's why I created the Harvest Institute. And so what we're doing now is trying to go back and understand everything that's happened to black folks, and I'm trying my best in my book, in my institute, to turn everything upside down and give you a halfway fighting chance to come out of it as a winner. I don't want you to lose anymore. I'm tired of black folk losing. Okay? So let me finish up this little bit of history and we'll get into the solutions, because I only got about 38 minutes left. Now, here's what happened. So by 1900, when Jews began to come into the country, what they were doing then, they came in looking for wealth-building opportunities. Go look at all their basic documents for their organization. They came in looking to build businesses and to find wealth and money. When our organizations came in, the Urban League and NAACP, between 1905 and 1912, what they looked for black folk was going back to that old public policy that was set up in 1660 saying black folks should be a labor, subordinated, non-compensated labor class. So what they were looking for us was to do what? Find what? Jobs. Which means you were to be employees. Never employers, but to be employees. And so immediately after the First World War, blacks started getting a little uppity when they came back from World War I. And the whites in the South didn't like that. And so you had major conflict. And the whites, so racism intensified in the country. Blacks had farms. Some of the white radical groups started burning their crops. They started lynching on average of 2 to 3 blacks a day. And they poured kerosene on their cotton and ran blacks out of the South. Those blacks then by 1920 were moving north. They moved into Gary, Detroit, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Buffalo, New York, and went into the factories. When they started moving out, whites then started working on trying to get a replacement for them. Because at that point in time, black folks were picking on average about 20 pounds of cotton an hour. So whites started inventing the machines. And by 1940, blacks had invented a machine called a cotton picking machine that can now pick 1,000 pounds of cotton an hour. So by 1947, black folks were obsolete in the South. They no longer needed you in the South. You were through in the South by 1947. Machine had replaced you. But all those blacks who drifted north in those big cities had gone into the steel mills, automobile plants, chemical plants, meatpacking plants. And we're doing reasonably well. Blacks did reasonably well in the north between about 1940 and 1966 in those factories. Then all of a sudden in about 1966, guess what happened again? Technology caught up. And black folks went obsolete in the north. And ironically, blacks went obsolete in 1966, right in the midst of the civil rights movement. When Martin Luther King was saying, free at last, thank God we're free at last, he was not talking about black folks. He was talking about for the first time in history, whites no longer needed black folks. And whites were free. They now had invented a computer. And computer-driven machinery, they no longer needed you. So the factories started closing down in the north at that point in time. And that's when your crime started going up too. Because not only they started closing down and firing blacks in those major cities, but at that point in time, the public policy on black folks shifted to what it is today. Now the old public policy, remember, was that black folks were being excluded, subordinated, non-compensated, non-competitive, managed workforce for the personal confidence and wealth building of white society. They shifted it to where it is today. As soon as black people became obsolete in 1966 in the middle of the civil rights movement, the new policy was this. Three things that whites came up with. One, that no white person in any responsible position will take any responsibility for what's happened to black folk in the past. Two, nobody's going to feel any guilt for what's happened to black folk. And three, that nobody will approve any programs, public policies that will shift the resources from whites to blacks. That's why they're anti-affirmative action, anti-preference treatment, anti-set-aside, anything else. They're not going to let the wealth shift into the hands of blacks under any circumstance. And so because that one time, not only had you become obsolete, but they had you nailed to the wall. And so in the civil rights movement, we had made three fatal mistakes by then, and we never knew it. I was the only black in politics in Florida in the governor's office in 1970. Here are the mistakes that occurred. One, is throughout the civil rights movement, black people never had a plan. Never had a plan in all those years. All they took to do was they ran from one civil rights movement, one demonstration, and riot to the next. To this very day, blacks don't have a plan. And whites have had plans on us since 1638. You don't have a national plan. No black in America knows where he's going and how he's going to get there, what he's supposed to do. Can you imagine 36 million people, no idea about what they're going to do? The second mistake we had made is that somehow they thought by taking down the signs over the bathrooms, over the water fountains, by where blacks could sit, somehow you were dealing with racism. They thought racism was the stuff I'm keep telling you about. They thought the slogans were racism. That was not racism. Racism was four floors down. They never touched racism during the civil rights movement. Allowing a black person to sit on the bus is immaterial. Allowing a black to go into a hotel is a waste of time. Can't he pay to get out? And the third thing mistake we made was that we never created an institution that would educate our young black kids. On how to deal with racism, that we could give them a plan and they would be trained as a leadership class to pick up that plan and run with it. So between 1966 and 1996, black youth fell through the cracks because we let them down. We let them down for a number of reasons. One, because we pursued integration when we should have been pursuing desegregation. Now, what did I mean by that? Desegregation means just stop the government from using its power and resources to deprive you. And what most blacks thought they were getting was assimilation. Assimilation means they wanted to move in America with whites and disappear, just like the Asians and the Hispanics can do. Whites never gave you assimilation. They gave you integration. Integration is another something behind the counter. Integration is a weaker form of segregation. Now you're weaker than you ever were. Remember I told you about the strong will win, the weak will suffer, the majority will win? Integration means that you have now been scattered into pieces. You have no power. Power doesn't come from individuals. It comes from the group. You all should never do anything as individuals. Do it as a group. Okay? In this church, you all stick together all the time. Stick together as a group and stay behind your leaders. And they can't get to you. Integration also took away your leadership. The minute you integrated, what you did, you accepted Newt Gingrich and Bob Dole as your leaders. That's why black leadership disappeared. When you integrate, that means you become a guest. Integration means black people become G-U-E-S-T-S. You're a guest. You're a guest in everything everybody else owns and controls. You're a guest in their hotels, their restaurants, their airlines, their neighborhoods, their schools. You don't own anything in America because you volunteered to become guests. And before integration, blacks had their own communities. They had their own resources. They had their own businesses all over this country. And you young people here today, you don't know it, but I'm telling you, black folk had viable competitive communities before integration. They had clean communities. We did not have the crime in the black community. As a matter of fact, before integration, most blacks in America never had to lock their doors. And a part of the problem is we don't lock it because we didn't have locks on the doors. You got scared to put a chair under the door. And you left your window up all the time because you didn't have air conditioning. And most blacks in the South, where I grew up, when the mother would leave home, she'd say, "Miss Jones, I'm going downtown, watch the house." And I could walk, as a child, I could walk through almost every house in my neighborhood, through the front door and the back door was open, nobody cares. Or I could go into a house and borrow some sugar and go home, nobody cares. And everybody knew each other. But what they did with integration, they took the Highway Act and said, if you all want to immigrate, you're going to come here without any power and resources. So they took the Expressway of 1952 Act, and they drove an expressway through every black community in America. And so now, any city I go to, I can find a black neighborhood by finding the expressway. Either the black neighborhood will be up over it, underneath it, or beside it. And now you have no black businesses. And in North Carolina, where I grew up, my family was the only family that had a part ownership in the only black bus line in the entire United States. We didn't have a bus line with three or four buses. We had the biggest bus line in the state and the only one in America for blacks. We had over 500 buses. We serviced the black neighborhoods and the white neighborhoods. What put us out of business was not Duke Power who we put out of business. What put us out of business was integration. Because when Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks integrated the buses down in Montgomery, and black folk wanted to sit on the front of the bus. When it got to North Carolina, the people in North Carolina, the blacks said, we want to sit on the front of the white buses too. And we said, but we don't have any white buses up here. They said, well, get some so we can sit on the front of them. And so we went out of business. We had black cab companies. We had two black cab companies, the Harris and Camel City cab companies. They went out of business. You know why? Blacks didn't want to ride in the black cabs anymore. They want to ride in the white cabs. They wanted to ride in the yellow cab and the bluebird cab. We had our own theaters. We had the Lafayette and Lincoln Theater chain all over America. We had film companies in Jacksonville, Florida. Norman Productions in Jacksonville made black westerns and black black love romance films. We had a black studio in Chicago and a black studio here in Hollywood called Hollywood Productions. It was black owned. We made our own films. Now we have no studios, no distribution system, and no theaters. And what I'm telling you all is you're going backwards. We had mattress factories, we had broom factories, we had blacks in the oil drilling companies. We had a black railroad line in Jacksonville, Florida. We had another black railroad company in Oklahoma. And now we have nothing in the entire United States because integration took it away from us. The other thing the integration does for you, you got to understand, integration also is draining your capital. All your money now is moving out of your community into the white community. Okay? Black America right now is the ninth richest nation on earth. We got approximately $380 billion worth of disposable income. We're richer than Sweden, Australia, Canada, Pakistan, India, and all the black African countries put together. But we're the poorest nation on earth because we violate every principle of economics. Your money is supposed to stay inside your community and bounce 8 to 12 times before it leaves. Black money does not bounce one time. You know why it doesn't bounce one time? Because you don't have any communities to bounce it in. You're so busy integrating. Where are you going to bounce it? How are you going to pass it through another black hand? So as soon as a black person gets paid, before it touches another black hand, he runs right to the suburbs and spends it. He spends 95% of his money immediately outside his own community. He keeps 5% to take back into his community. Out of 5% he takes back into his community, he spends 3% of that in non-black-owned hands in his own communities. Look around your neighborhood. Goes into non-black-owned businesses. Only 2% of all the black people in America keep their own money in their own communities. And then out of the 2% they keep, they then take that down to a white bank, put it in the bank, can't even get a loan. And now you're bankrupt. You go bankrupt every 24 hours, this is regular clock, and whites don't take you serious. They know that anybody who goes bankrupt every 24 hours should not be taken seriously. You started raising cane outside their store, they say, hey, wait a minute, it's 3 o'clock, wait for those blacks. They'll go bankrupt about another 3 hours. They know you're gonna violate all the rules. So the reason we don't have any black businesses in America is for three reasons. One, we've never had a national plan to start building black businesses in the country. That's why I wrote my book. That's why you got a plan now. Two is that whites and other groups are boycotting your neighborhood. They're boycotting you. And three, we're boycotting our own neighborhoods, our own stores. That's why we don't have anything. Now, as long as you live, you would never see a white person get up on a Saturday morning, drive down to a black neighborhood, and get out of his car and go into a black store to buy something made by a black person. If you do, take a picture of it. You have something very valuable one day. All of America, on Friday evening, go to any big city, and you'll see blacks lined up to get into Chinatown to go to China, eat some Chinese food. Have you ever seen Chinese lined up trying to get into a black town? Somebody is not playing with a full deck. You're not playing the game to win. You're just playing. And you got to stop spending your money. So then I go to various cities, and blacks got the nasty habit, when company comes, putting them in their car on a Sunday and taking them out to the white community and say, let me go out and show you some nice white homes. Y'all know what I'm talking about. Let's go out to look at the white malls. And then they come back home and say, how in the world can white folks afford all those fine homes and big houses? It's easy. It's your money. You see what I'm saying? And y'all think I'm teasing. See, they're living off of two incomes. They live off 100% of their income and 95% of yours. And you're trying to live off of 2%. It is humanly impossible for a race of people to live off of 2% of their income. And in America, you equate human worth based on what you own. And if black folks don't own 2%, that's why white racists say, black folks ain't worth 2 cents. Because we don't own anything, and human worth is equated in this country based on what you own and control. And we violate all the premises of economics. We have yet to learn how to practice group economics. And the last thing about integration is that integration got a quota system, and you need to know this. It's got a quota system. You hear white somebody against quotas? They're wrong. It got a quota system. Anytime you get more than 5 to 8% of blacks involved in anything, whites are going to put up chains. They're going to stop you. If more than 5 to 8% of blacks move into their community, they're going to put their house up for sale. If more than 5% of blacks, 8% of blacks go into their schools, they're going to pull their kids out of school. If more than 5 to 8% of blacks come into their businesses, they're going to move the business out of town, cross town, out of the country. If more than 5 to 8% of blacks come into their association, they'll resign. They got a quota system. And people say, well, blacks are against affirmative action. No, they're not against affirmative action. They're against affirmative action for you. You see, they're against the set-aside. Racism is nothing but preferential treatment for whites. They say they're against preferential treatment. You hear them say they're against set-aside. Jim Crow is nothing but a 100-year set-aside program for whites. So they set aside the best restaurants, the best food, the best schools for whites. They say they're against quotas. You got a quota system, I told you, in the immigration laws. Today, you still are a planned minority. You can't win. So now let me get to some solutions for you very quickly. I have a few more minutes I got left. What we're going to do across this country now is what we call Powernomics. That's a new book coming out called Powernomics, Unleashing Black American Potential. It's a follow-up to the book, Black Labor, White Wealth. It'll show you in very specific terms what you got to do to be competitive. The things you got to focus on is in broad categories with specific principles. The first is a community. You cannot do anything unless you have a community. Your community is your social cohesiveness. The only power, the potential that black people have in America is your social, racial cohesiveness. If you don't have that, you have no power. Forget about everything else. That's a fact of life. You got to have a community because the community will give you your businesses. It'll give you your sales opportunities and your markets. Now, how do you develop communities? First thing you must do is stay out of all cross-purpose issues. Cross-purpose means horizontal issues. Don't get involved in any horizontal issues. Let me explain it to you. I see the puzzlement in your eyes. First, racism is vertical. Remember this. Racism is straight up and down. Racism means I don't care whether you are the lowest income black or the highest, the best educated or the least educated. It doesn't make any difference. You're all in the same tube. Okay? That's what Malcolm X was asking, was a black man with a PhD. Remember that saying? He answered, well, he's still a Negro. Okay? It means it doesn't make any difference. You're all in together. That's straight up and down. Horizontal issues are any issue that pertains to everybody. Stay out of it. You're the weakest and poorest, most vulnerable people. Don't get involved in it. Because the only people that can benefit are those people who are directly behind where the horizontal crosses the vertical. Okay? The only people that benefit are where those two points cross. That's too small. You don't have that kind of energy and resources to waste. Now, what's a horizontal issue? Sexism is a horizontal issue. If you get into the various religious issues, that's a horizontal issue. Poverty is a horizontal issue. I keep coming to my civil rights leaders. Stay away from poverty. You cannot eradicate poverty. Poverty is a fix. It's a given. You're always going to have poor people. And people say, well, you're going to have poor Greeks, poor Indians, poor Lithuanians, poor Hungarians. Quit trying to eradicate poverty and try to get as many black folk as you out and leave poverty alone. But they try to eradicate something that can't be eradicated. Culturalism, that's a horizontal issue. That pertains to everybody. Let me give you about sexism, for instance. I tell black women who always want to get into sex issues, they think that somehow that the issue is sex rather than racism. See, my great-grandmother was not enslaved because she's a woman. She was enslaved because she was black. Okay? And if you're going to get into sexism, I want black women to understand this. To keep your priorities in order. If I say abracadabra right now and sexism disappears, you still can't go any place because you're black. And to keep it in order, remember what your mother felt. The minute she knew she was pregnant, she knew at that moment she was going to have what? A black child long before she knew the sex. You keep your priorities straight and say, since my color came before my sex, I'm going to keep it in that order. You always say black first. So stay out of cross-purpose issues. I'll explain all the next time I come back out here on a Power Numbers workshop or something. But that's very important. I can show you all the problems you got with that. And see, but once you stay out of those horizontal issues, like I tell some of my Muslim friends, I said, don't be worried about pushing Islamic faith. Push your skin color first and stay aligned with your people. And I tell them, the people in the Baptist church, quit worrying about about being a Baptist and worry about being black. And again, I have to give credit to your minister. It seems like he's one of the few in the country who understands that. That you put who you are and as a people before you start talking about what denomination you belong to. And especially since most of the denominations on the earth all work together to enslave black folks, all of them pimp and hustle black folks. The Catholics, the Protestants, the Baptists, the Jews, and everybody else got black folks. But what we're going to do then is start, once we get past building these communities, then we're going to start getting into what we call practicing, building alternative economic structures. That's very important. You've got to build your own alternative economic structure. An alternative economic structure, in the short time I haven't got time to explain it, is nothing but building your own city, your own community, your own town. Building a lot of small sub-communities all over America. You build a community of markets, a community of producers, a community of distributors, a community of retailers. And we all interconnect all over the country and build a vertical order. Let me give you an example, for instance. The reason I'm down in Tuskegee and down in New Orleans is because, as an example, we're trying to build 12 major industries in America. The first one is seafood. Why am I picking seafood? Because one of the first principles of Powernomics is you must always dominate economically wherever you dominate in population. We as black folk are one of the largest consumers of seafood in America. We must dominate in seafood production. So what I did down there was go out there and I got blacks now who are raising seafood on and ponds. They're growing crab, oysters, clam, catfish, trout, and bass. I'm building 1,000 acres of sea ponds, food ponds, aqua ponds, where they're raising seafood. Now, I got blacks in the farmers now, they're going to raise grain, wheat, soybean, corn, and wheat. They're going to make the feed for us to feed those fish. Now, when that comes up, I'm heading out here next week. I'm building and putting in $5 million into a processing plant in the South. I don't name the city because I don't want people to try to cut me off. But we're building our own processing plant. All that seafood then is bought from those black farmers. Those blacks that got land they're not using, they're now going into business and making money raising seafood and raising feed. And blacks are now going to be hauling that feed over those ponds. And again, I'm asking for people to raise the money to build the ponds. We already got about 5 ponds coming up already. And now, when it comes up, all that seafood is being picked up and shipped to our plant. And in our plant, as I say, the plant costs almost $5 million, $4.5 million to $5 million. We already got $30 million of sales already on the books going through the plant. Okay? Now, once that seafood comes in that plant, it's processed, diced, sliced, and prepared. And then it's shipped out of there up north. I've identified 12 major cities in the north where I'm building receivership, distributorship for that seafood to be trucked up to and sold out of there. Detroit, Michigan, New York, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Houston, Oakland, California, and New Orleans. And so people ask me about Los Angeles. Now, when the food gets there, we're going to have a freezer where all that food is stored. And then we're setting up franchises, fast food franchises. That food would then be transferred over to a restaurant. Now, we got the prototype restaurants up now in South Bay. 2 restaurants. They are fast food restaurants called Fish City. They're selling the fish and all kind of seafoods with a special kind of menu. Now, McDonald's and Burger King, our 2 competitors on both sides, do about $780,000 a year. We do twice what McDonald's and Burger King do and sell, okay? Our stores sell $1.5 million. They're doing $1.5 million a year, both stores. And our stores, we've got traffic around our stores, 2 blocks long, 24 hours a day around the store. And they're all black owned. So they can't cut us off. I got us locked in from the seafood to the grain all the way to the restaurants and the market. Okay? And the only way they can get me out is to turn my people against us. And they can't turn us against us because I love my folks too much and they think too much of what I'm trying to do for them, so they can't get us out. Okay. And so in those cities, we're selling those franchises to blacks at half what it costs to go into a Burger King store. A Burger King store costs you about $550,000 to start a store. Our seafood place costs you about $250,000. And you bring back twice the profit. Okay? So we have beat them in that store. Now, also along the line, we're setting up other kinds of operations. Blacks will be going into the trucking business, servicing that. It's vertically ordered. And some blacks will be selling the restaurant suppliers, the security service, the building the stores, insurance and stuff, employment agencies. And in each city, our stores will produce something like about 50 businesses per store just in seafood per city, 50 businesses per city. And any blacks can get these franchises, and you all going to have a chance to get them out here in Los Angeles and come to Los Angeles someplace like next June. At that point in time, save your money and start raising capital. Now, I'll tell you what we're doing down in New Orleans, so you know now, down in New Orleans, we don't have one black tourist area in America. And again, I want my people to come together and build a community. So when I was down in New Orleans, I was going through the black community trying to find the old black communities. In New Orleans, right now, when people go there, they got the French Quarter, all white, no blacks down in that area. I've gone over and identified an area now where we're going to rebuild a black community there. And I got two blocks of land down there. I'm trying to build, I'm going to put in black clubs there with black entertainment, for a jazz club, a blues club, and a pop-up club. We're going to put in black restaurants. And we're also going to put in souvenir shops. And we're doing it vertically. And we come out with a national campaign asking all blacks in America, since we don't have a black tourist area in America, plan your conferences only in New Orleans. When you go to New Orleans, I'm asking blacks down there to save your money and help me buy some mini buses. You know, I want about 10 mini buses to set up a bus service scheduled to go in and out of every hotel to haul those blacks over to that community where they can be entertained and be fed and dine and wine and taken back to the hotel until we build our own hotel in New Orleans. New Orleans has about a 67% black population. They don't own anything in the whole city. And we're going to change that and turn it around. That's what I was in New Orleans for. And we're getting it together real fast. We're getting all kinds of support. Not only all support from blacks, I got a lot of whites all over the country trying to help us too. They understand the need. So get one thing clear now. All whites are not bad. That's what I'm saying. We got a heck of a lot of whites that are helping us all over the country trying to solve this problem. Because a lot of them understand, they know that we cannot make it otherwise. So they're helping us. Same thing, let me give you one other example. The third business coming up is leather. I'm trying to get blacks to compete in the leather industry. Now, right now, most of our leather is coming in from Taiwan, Korea, Hong Kong, China. And the reason they're going that way is because they got environmental laws where they can produce the leather cheaper by the labor and also by the environmental restrictions for tanning. I found out how to beat them, so we're going to build a leather industry. I'm trying to get blacks together now. We're going to set up our leather procurement system in Florida. We're going to buy skins, reptiles, cows, sheep skin, cow skin. We're going to have a procurement system in Florida. We're trying to build a plant, a tannery in Haiti. There's no cheaper labor market in the world than Haiti. We're going to build a tanning plant there where those blacks will have a chance to own that plant along with blacks in America. And while the Asians are shipping their leather to Hong Kong and China to be processed, which takes 60 days, I can ship mine over there in 3 days in Florida and get it tanned and get it back. When that leather comes back in the United States, I'm trying to set up two plants. One plant in New York and one in Pittsburgh, where blacks will own a plant. It's a cut and sew operation. That leather come in there, they can produce at least five different kinds of leather. Leather for furniture, leather for shoe leather. They can produce utilitarian leather, also wear leather, purse bag and belt leather. Okay? Once that leather's been produced, those cut and sew factories can be sent all over the United States to two major distribution centers, one in the West, one in the North, where blacks like you all can say, I want to be a distributor of that leather. I want to be a warehouser, a wholesaler of that leather. Any of it. Then we're going to put retail shops in the malls in these cities and in all these communities where you can sell black-owned leather. Then I'm asking the black entertainers, athletes in America, to quit going on TV advertising Japanese and Asian leather, advertise good black leather. And so we're going to build a leather industry where you have your own chances, your own industry, and own your own businesses. As I said, we're going to sink our roots into the ground and grow tall and strong, and nobody can pull us up. And we're going to have our own communities built around our own industries. And each and every one of you have a chance to go in your own businesses where you'll be dependent upon the black above you and the black beneath you. To depend on them, okay? Buy from your own people, trust and love your own people, because nobody else cares about you or have any incentive or interest in black folk in America anymore. one, I'm going to give her a point, is Detroit, Michigan. One in Detroit, Michigan is 84% black. Now, going to the city, they got a black mayor, a black city council, a black board of education, and a black school superintendent, and a black police chief. They said, Dr. Anderson says, since you're here, we're going to give you a trophy and a plaque. Say something nice to us. I said, first of all, well, say something nice. What are you doing for black folk in the city? They said, we got an office of minority business. I said, we got an office of minority business. He said, yeah, that's the first office you'll close down. You got an 84% black city. You got an office of a minority business for black folk. They said, yes. I said, somebody is not, the light's on, but nobody's home. When the first thing you must learn is when you become the majority, you must act like the majority. You see what I'm saying? In Detroit, Michigan, they just reversed. You got an 84% black city, and you got and a 3% white population. The blacks are acting like they're the minority, and when they're the majority, and the white minority is acting like they're the majority. So everything downtown is owned by whites. Everything in the city is owned by whites. Blacks own nothing. And because the blacks can't get their mentality straight about learning how to practice and learn how to win. And so I go look at the contracts for services and goods in a city like Detroit. 97% of everything in Detroit for services and goods and contracts go to whites. And the city is 84% black. Because blacks don't understand that they are supposed to be winning. And I told them, I said, first, they said, what would you do? I said, first of all, I would sue all of them. Because that's against the law. Because, you see, our good jurist, Clarence Thomas, has already ruled, saying that you cannot bypass a majority to give to a minority. You all got to get tricky. When you become the majority, you practice that. Oh, we're the majority now. You see? When you build these communities, you become the majority. And you start the winning. Because remember, the majority wins, the minority loses. And as long as every time you use the word minority, you say, I'm a loser. It creates a negative mindset. Quit putting that negative mindset in your children's heads. And say, when you become the majority, we're going to win. And so therefore, I'll take all of you to court. And the same thing in Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. is 77% black. And the white developers just went to court to sue blacks in Washington, D.C., saying that the 20% set aside for minorities in the water system there is unfair for giving minorities anything. And I agree. I said, you're right. I said, because the whites are the minority. And would you all believe that blacks are fighting to preserve a minority program in a city where they are the majority? Because they can't switch gears. And so what's happening in this country now is now people become paralyzed. It's just like a deer standing on the highway at night in a bright headlight of an oncoming truck. They can't figure out what they're paralyzed, standing there frozen and getting run over. So what's frozen them is this whole concept of a colorblind society. You do not live in a colorblind society. What that whole concept means is let's pretend that we're colorblind and don't see black folks. Now, that concept came out of one of the think tanks again. And the think tanks kind of came up with a solution, say, how do we maintain this inequity where whites are 50-foot giants and blacks are 1-foot midgets? They say, pretend that everything that black folk want, that you've already given it to them. They say they want freedom, the abracadabra, you got it. See, they're not empowering you. They're giving you symbols and slogans rather than the tools. You want to be equal, abracadabra, you equal. You want equal opportunity, abracadabra, you all got it. And so now all the conservative elements of this country have figured out if they go back and take the language of the civil rights movement and use it against black folk can't move. Because black folk can't figure out what to do like that deal on the highway. If forward discrimination took them too far into the garage, the only way you can get the car out of the garage is put it in reverse. They said, no, y'all can't put it in reverse. That's reverse discrimination. We admit that we use forward discrimination to get it in there, but y'all can't use reverse discrimination to get it out. See? So therefore, you got to keep the car in neutral. And we got to have a race-neutral society now. And that way, however things exist now, it is stuck and frozen like that. And that's when we are colorblind society. And so consequently, nobody wants to look after my people anymore. They just stand there frozen on the highway. And I'm very much concerned. I got all kind of plans on the power now, how we can solve some of these problems. Same thing in politics. In politics, start teaching your people to be responsible. And don't vote for anybody who was in office, green, yellow, black, if he would not deliver back to the black community. Okay? Politics is a process that simply defines who's going to get what out of life. But it must be based on quid pro quo. Everybody you put in the office must deliver something very specifically back to the black community. Don't let them get off the hook by saying, well, I'll hire a black person. I don't care. Clinton will give you that same tale. I'm going to hire a black. I don't care who he puts as a secretary. That's not the issue. What is the black community going to get back in return for his vote? And that's why they keep sucking. You don't ever get anything. Because we don't raise cane. It must be quid pro quo, something for something. We give you something, you owe us something back to the race. And that's why in the last election, I was Clinton's political advisor in Maryland. Clinton got 41% of the white vote, 42% of the Hispanic vote, and 43.4% of the female vote. But 92% of the black vote hadn't done anything for blacks yet. Because nobody wants to do anything for us because we don't demand and insist on it. And you must hold everybody accountable. If a black person runs for office, you go after him and take him out of office too. Any way you can, okay? I know my time is up. I've been watching my clock. My time is just about up, but I would spend a lot of time teaching you how to play politics. There are a lot of rules in polynomics. But the thing I'm telling you in conclusion is everything you do, play it to win. Practice group economics, group politics, build alternative economic structures, redesign your school system. Right now, people are saying school systems are failing blacks. The school systems are not failing blacks. The school systems are doing exactly what they were originally designed to do. That was to produce you, to produce blacks who were marginally educated to work for whites. But now, as I told you, is that blacks are obsolete. They don't need your kids anymore. They don't need half-educated kids anymore. And so what you should do is go back and close down the assembly line and get your plan and say, we will now rebuild our schools across black America based on the needs of black Americans. In other words, what I'm saying to you is this. If I told you all right now we were going to the moon, and we agreed to go to the moon, now our schools would know what to do. Because now they say if black folks going to the moon, you see, you got some direction. And now the school system say, well, now we gotta produce more mechanics and more astronauts and more physicists and biochemistry. We gotta prepare for that. But right now the school system is still operating the way they were designed in 1867. Was to produce black folk who be marginally educated people. And nobody wants our kids. Our kids keep telling you all that. That's why right now in the large cities, 65% of all the black kids that start nursery school never graduate from high school. They're telling you something, you're not listening. They're saying you're dysfunctional. They know you can go into school. The school doesn't mean anything. There are no businesses in my community. There's no help. There's nothing in my neighborhood worth staying into. Go back and develop a national plan about where your people want to go, and then transmit that plan to every black individual, every black corporation, every black association. And then we can do it. We got the expertise, we got the skills, we got a little bit of money, and the last thing I do is get rid of a lot of our black leadership. Okay? All these black leaders in America now, the head of our two or three major institutions, keep talking about looking out for everybody but black folks. You tell them that day is over. Nobody's going to sell black folk anymore. The day of selling black folk over. If you want to sell them, you've got to find yourself another job. Because right now, black folk are hurting too much, and it's too bad for us in this world to keep letting black folk get up there and get in these high positions and talk about everybody but black folk. If you don't want to be black, go home and sit down and look at TV. And I tell all my friends, even those who look at the rainbow, talking about a rainbow coalition, as I'm telling you, there is no blackness in the rainbow. And if you want a rainbow, look inside my race and you'll find it. Look at this beautiful rainbow of people, all the colors you want. There's my rainbow. And I love you all and thank you very much.
From the slave ship to the chain, from the taskmaster's whip to my brain, kidnapped, enslaved, raped and killed by the Lynch clan again and again. Is it the origin of the skin or the face of a race? Why you don't care about me?
Now I know you don't care about me. I'm just a nigga walking down. I know you don't care about me. Start exchange 41 for 90. Our ancestors were the lead countries and the sticks and whips and kicks and punches. Meanwhile, you're living like some Brady Bunches. Tell me where the justice, much less the sanctions. We're worth much more than the freaking sanctions.
Survival is to be accepted and treated as a member of the human family. This practice should reveal the fundamental right and duty to be humane in all judgments and actions to all humanity. So why don't you care about me?
Say, I know you don't care about me. I'm just a nigga walking down your street. The brother did nothing wrong. But now his life is gone, and I know you don't care about me. Code of silence, you say, but your action is so loud and clear. Are the hour killers gone free? Stay by society, and I know you don't care about me.
I'm a duty, I'll be killing for nothing. No crime he did not do. And just like it, there were others who suffer for what they didn't do. Living in a system, we are the victims, and that is so true. I'm a duty, I'll love. Reggae music, now your name. I'm a duty, I'll love. Hey. I'm a duty, I'll love. Hey. I'm a duty, I'll love. Boy. Reggae music knows your name. Yeah.
Code of silence, you say. Yes, your actions speak so loud and clear. The outlaw's killers going free, paid by society. And I know you don't care about me.
Yo, Jiggy, check this out.
Gonna change how the same thing's been happening.
Over and over again. Over and over again. When they say the Constitution's for the benefit of all.
Something up. America has a serious problem. Black folks got a serious problem. Fucking put your head out your ass. They're crushing us. Shit. Fuck alone, can we keep on losing? Shit, the fuck is wrong with y'all? You got motherfuckers that want to go along with what's going on. That shit ain't cool. Stop closing your eyes to what's happening out here. Tell the fucking truth. Stop walking by the shit. Shit is annoying. Get involved. Quit fucking running. Shit. I'm trying to get some people involved, man. They keep fucking running away from me. Shit is ridiculous. Like what's going on, then hey, step the fuck aside. Don't get in my way telling me you can do this and do that, and then your ass run away. Bugging the shit out of me. Oh, my buddy's here. Hey, hey, Jerome, you there? Hey, Jerome?
How you doing there, Chef?
How you doing, man?
What's how you doing, Rob?
Yo, don't press those buttons there, man. Don't be pressing the buttons. That shit loud as hell, man. Fucking people up.
Are you talking about me?
How you doing, Jerome? How was your day?
Busy as usual.
You missed the meat, you know, everything that was going on earlier.
Uh-huh.
Wish I had got you something about that, but you don't, you know. Hello, on the other side. What you're thinking. You wouldn't want to listen to that, brother. He told you some stuff to woke your ass up.
I can respect that.
Where you at, man? At a bar?
No, no. I'm actually on the train.
You on the train?
Yeah.
I'm listening to other fucking talk on your train, man. What's wrong with you?
Well, I mean, I was just going to listen because it is kind of hard to hear on the train.
Okay, well, I'm going to put your ass on mute. We're going to come back to you. You press one when you off the fucking train.
Sounds good.
Thank you. Brother Kometu. Yeah?
Okay, Chef Rob.
Chef, how you feeling, brother?
Good. How you doing?
I'm all right, man. You heard most of that clip earlier, man.
Oh, yeah. I heard most of it, and I think I had that tape.
Oh, I've been playing it in the car.
I was at work earlier, so I couldn't click in and nothing. But it was you're playing the recording anyway.
Yeah,
but I sense your frustration, and man, I'm with you. I got it too.
Man, you know, and one of the cats who was supposed to be working with me, man. He told me we were supposed to meet. Check this out. He told me we were supposed to meet. Then I said, okay, well, fuck it. You know, I went and did something else. And I said, this motherfucker walked across the street with a bunch of... I said, run your ass the fuck over, man. You had me waiting like... fuck up my whole day, and you're going to walk right in front of the car? I was like, man, these motherfucker. He's like, hey, man, I'll give you a call, man. I said, shit, your ass be hard for you to call from a hospital bed, you bastard, man. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Hey, man, I know the feeling. I do weekly meetings, and even the people in my little group, and I've been doing this shit since 91, so I ain't no young buck in this shit. And
yeah.
I can't get niggas past level one.
Shit. It's not for lack of effort,
and it ain't a lack of knowledge from on my part. They don't want to do shit.
I'd be like, man, come on now. If I put this bottle of champagne on the table, y'all go ahead and suck that shit up. But that shit costs money, motherfucker. Let's go make some money to go get some more bottles.
They don't even want to do that. Unless they're getting it from the white man.
Yeah, man. I'd be like, oh, shit. So it's kind of hard. So somehow I got to figure out a plan to sabotage these motherfuckers, make them get their asses out there. You know.
Me too. And, you know, I chose the field of literature. I chose to sell books since about 91. And I did well for a while, but at this point, you can't even make a nigga read.
So what made him read before?
You know, I don't know what it was. The scunion was on their ass, and they, I guess they felt it imperative. But now I think they relax and think, I don't know what it is. I know I can't quit reading because it's uncomfortable.
They think everything is fine?
I think, you know, they know everything ain't fine because they keep complaining to me about shit. But they don't want to do nothing about it.
Like,
when I have a meeting, when I have a meeting, I'm looking at two big old boxes of books right now that I still sell. I never stopped. I had a storefront and I had to close it, but I kept selling books. And they ain't reading.
I want to read.
Mm-mm.
Well,
this electronic shit done got them drunk and high. I don't know what the hell's going on.
And if
you don't have the apparatus of the modern Barnes & Noble setup or a Kindle or something, they don't read that shit either, then they treat you like you ain't shit.
Man,
you know they don't
right,
read that
man,
shit.
Because I get sick of fools going ahead and standing around me and talking about how many of these, they got this and that and this and that and this and this. I was like, man, did you build any of that shit, man? You know, you can go ahead and build a lot of that shit, man. It'll be a lot cheaper, motherfucker. You're a dumbass.
None of it.
And you know what? But I think they require, you know, for them to go ahead and build it, it requires some fucking reading.
Right, and some nuts. Are you going to be scared of every goddamn thing? Get your ass up and do something.
Man.
And it do require reading. And you know, as a bookseller, some of the most, we should do a show on just books and shit one day. But as a bookseller, some of the most stupid shit I've heard is, I read. What you read? You know I'm gonna test them. What you read, nigga? I read ingredients. But nigga, you can't even say monodextrose and shit. Shut up. Just lying.
That sound like some Sarah Palin shit.
You said it right. That they're the black Sarah Palin, males and females.
I'm like, oh my goodness, man. I read. Well, yeah. What do you read? You know, I read magazines. Which one? All of them.
That's exactly what I've heard.
I read
sports page in the newspaper. But nigga, they don't even make newspapers no more. That shit's online. What you talking about?
Oh man, that shit
lying.
Hilarious.
Just lying.
I don't argue with motherfuckers like that no more. I just laugh and walk the fuck away. But okay. I get tired of going ahead and standing in front of fools and going ahead and trying to make a presentation to them, and you know they don't catch it. You know, I ain't got no time to be wasting with you. Get the fuck away from me with that shit.
You really ain't got the time for it, especially if you're a mover and shaker and doing shit yourself. They want to slow a nigga down.
Oh yeah, that cause I
and they want to keep you perpetually in kindergarten and preschool and shit. It's like, nigga, you 52. I've been talking this shit to your ass for 10 years and you still ain't ready to do shit? Like, damn.
Right.
Hell, I read Yorugu. It took me about 6 months to get through and read every single page and study it and everything, but damn it, I finished. And not only finished it, I applied it. I used the terms of Sili, Utamaroho, Utamawazo. I've spoken with Sister Marimba Ani before. I've organized groups and study groups around the material. So, you know, niggas just don't get it, that it's a multi-level, multi-faceted struggle.
Wait, two hours a week.
This ain't no two hours a week shit.
Hold on. Let me tell you one way I think you can get them. Okay. You tell them, hey, look, I'm throwing this, you know, well, you can't say this. You tell them you they got to come read this material and come watch these videos, and then they're going to get some free shit later on. No. Because you know black people run for that free shit right the fuck away. Free, some free. Free.
Man,
so,
if it ain't Chris Powell or Chirac or some free pussy, they ain't coming.
It's all there. But you got to go ahead and sit through these videos and everything and you got somebody to take care of you right away.
Then they're going to badmouth you.
As long as you sit your ass, see, for me, if you sit your ass through some of it, then you can go ahead, you can talk shit about me, but you're going to talk shit about what you saw, and that's going to open up the conversation. So fuck them.
For sure. I'll keep that in noted. That's a duly noted suggestion.
Because you know they're going to be like, man, yeah, be watching this shit about such and such, so and so and so and so. You didn't tell other motherfuckers, then, hey, what was it about? And you'll see motherfuckers, they pay attention. You know, they may be talking shit, but they pay attention. But these fools are following.
Man, I'm going to tell you something. Grown-ass niggas is stuck and addicted to fucking video games. What the hell is that? You know, I did Pac-Man, Donkey Kong shit back in my day. But damn it, it didn't take up my whole day.
Yeah, no, that is sad, though.
Man, that is sad. We are reduced to less than children. Children got more sense than the adults running around here.
You know, when you see a fucker sitting there, we looking at the video games and you know, like sports games, and then he grading the cheerleaders. Man, it's some fucking problems there.
I know.
It's some problems. I was like, man, what is that? That is animation, you fool. You getting off to some cartoons, you goddamn idiot. What is wrong with you?
You got the nerve to make it public. You let everybody know you stupid.
Damn.
Like, man, that's the problem. Like, at least do wrong right, nigga. Damn. Hide that shit. Do it after 12 or something.
Oh, my goodness, man.
You know, it's like I was a teenage werewolf. I was a teenage idiot. Shit.
At 52. It's fucking sad, man.
I'm still a teenage idiot. That should be the name of the new book.
Hmm.
Nigga, you still stuck? That's another book title. I'm good at coming up with one-liners and book titles and shit. Nigga, you still stuck?
Yeah, I could use them for some show titles, man. What the fuck?
And what I do appreciate, Chef Rob, is that you're consistent and you continue to do your thing and you keep having the forum for people to wake the hell up.
Thanks, brother. I appreciate that, man. You know, I try to get here as much as I can, but it's some shit be stepping in my way. Just like that.
I know, but you work it out.
Well, like that bathroom was in this. So I had to
meet you. Use your social media to let people know, because I got the text tonight.
Oh, okay.
But I appreciate it, because I was at work listening.
Oh, okay, cool. Thanks, brother. I appreciate that. I got my brother Jerome here, too. He kind of consistent, so he'll come around. Even though he talk crazy, but yeah, I don't.
I've heard some of their conversations.
He be talking crazy.
And Lord, don't get Pianchi on there with you. Oh, my God. He's like Spanish and shit. I understand and agree with every third word and shit. All the other shit is bullshit.
Bianchi, good people, man. His heart's in the right place. You know, yeah, good people.
And he
man.
Is. And he's helpful when you need him. But boy,
yeah.
He know how to get on your nerves. He know how to say just the right thing to make you wonder, is you a sellout, nigga? What's up? And I do understand it's a generational thing, too. Certain concepts and things he just sees from a different way. And I accept that.
Right, right.
But some of the shit, don't say that shit, nigga.
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing Claude Anderson was saying, you know, he's basically saying, you know, all that outside stuff, man, you know, leave that alone. You know, you was black before you was Christian. You was black before you knew your sex. That's what, you know.
Right.
A lot of us don't get that. A lot of us
lost. And I even agree with him on you ain't no Indian.
Huh?
I even agree with him on you ain't no Indian.
Yeah, man. You know what? When he was saying that, man, I was like, wow, man, that fucked up. That can fuck up a whole lot.
Now, he was right and wrong, but he wasn't actually wrong. He was actually right. What he understands himself is that it's a government-created title. That ain't got shit to do with the indigenous people in this mug before that shit.
Okay.
It's a label. So all the people labeled as Negro was already here when they got here, when the crackers got here.
Yeah.
And they did ship some niggas in, but the niggas they shipped in was Moors. Under the Spanish. The other niggas they caught in Mississippi and sent to Florida, caught them in Florida and sent them to New York, caught them niggas in Maine and sent their ass to Texas, caught them in California and Oregon and sent their ass over to New Missouri and shit. Riverboat niggas. Coastal ship niggas.
Mm.
And we so dumb, we won't even investigate.
They're giving out free cell phones, man, around the corner.
We'll pay attention to that.
Some free cell phones.
I'm giving me a 5G, nigga.
They're giving out turkeys next week, so you know, that's the kind of news that travel fast in that book.
You don't even realize they used the turkey for jive turkey to celebrate defeating the Turkish Moors. Some other cousins and shit.
Let me give you one about them, them fucking turkeys. You know what? You can freeze a whole lot of shit. Okay? You can freeze stuff, man. You can keep it frozen for a long time. They got a whole lot of different ways to freeze stuff. The technology is a little bit different to go ahead and you freeze it. You don't fuck up the meat when it thaws out. Hell, they can freeze your ass and you look the damn same after, you know, right when you died or whatever. Fuck.
Yep, but flash freezing. You got it.
Some of these fuckers, when they giving out these turkeys and all that other shit, some of these motherfuckers ain't from, like, last week or 6 months ago. These motherfuckers old. You don't know how fucking old these goddamn things are. And it was one lady in California had bought a turkey from a grocery store to do business, who do some of the housing of the food, and some of them food places, they donate food to other places. This lady got a goddamn turkey. This turkey was 7 years old.
Oh, damn.
Now. 7 years. Now, think about, I'm telling you, you know, you got to pay attention what the fuck they're feeding you, because you don't know what the hell they're doing to that shit when they're housing. Okay?
Hmm. That's so true. Have no idea. I'm talking about they freeze a nigga's brain. I'm thinking they freeze a nigga's brains and put them back in the new bodies and shit. It's like, wait a minute. This is the same dumb nigga from 20 years ago.
Okay,
that's,
man,
what it seems like.
You know, it was somebody, I think my boy was last night. He was talking about the Frankenstein shit, man, where they still harvesting body parts and everything. And I got an email from this sister. She's in Kenya, right? She was saying how it's a company over there that got caught going ahead and kidnapping people and killing them and harvesting their body parts. And the company is a partnership with the U.S. and the Israelis. I'm gonna do a show on that. That shit was crazy.
You should, because that's the same story with the Viagra and the Cialis and the melatonin pills.
Oh, my God.
You know,
goodness.
Bobby Hemmett did a special on that a couple of years ago. And lo and behold, this, you know, I would think you niggas are just some conspiracy theory fake niggas, right? That's what the first thought would be if you ain't got no sense.
Let me make this clear.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
This was put in the Kenyan paper, the Kenyan newspaper. This was not circulating on the... This was put in the Kenya newspaper. So why didn't that article make it to you in the U.S. media?
Oh, man. So this was national news in Kenya.
Yes. This wasn't something people circulating around there talking, you know, and making up shit. This was put in the paper. Some cats was caught doing this over there.
Oh, man.
See, that's different than going ahead, people just going ahead and talking stuff and going that conspiracy theory. No, this was investigated. And when did she send me that shit? And I've been thinking about trying to fucking say something about that, because she sent me a lot of information on it, the paper and everything. Was it Star News or some shit, man? News Star or something? I got to look it up again. But yeah, that's...
Damn,
that's
I need
shit
that.
I was thinking about what some of the stuff that goes on here, and then I remember hearing a story about this one white doctor, I think it was in Arkansas, whenever black kids were being killed when before they buried them, this cat was taking out all the insides and selling them and stuff. He was trying to, you know, he was a funeral director, but he was working right with the coroner. So it was a few years. Can't remember that, man. I need to put that whole story together, man, because that's some wild shit.
That's some wild shit. You know, that pineal gland shit ain't no joke. They eat them. That's called the arcane ritual. And they've been doing that shit for years. They cut out the pineal gland. They put it in that movie, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, with Johnny Depp and Bernicio del Toro. That's what that was about. When they took that damn human, they put a human pituitary gland in the movie. But they were talking about a goddamn pineal gland. And when they took that goddamn pineal gland, It looked like they were turned into elephants, turned upside down, and shit all over the room.
Oh, that's kind of disgusting.
They tore up the whole room. They went to other dimensions with that shit.
Fuck, man, that's shit.
And to tell you, though, about what I was saying is, when I would have normally thought it was some conspiracy shit if I didn't know no better, if I wasn't smarter than the average bear and shit.
Mm.
And so what I did, when I heard Bobby say that, I was like, Bobby, you might be right about that, but I'm going to be sure and I'm going to have proof. I ran out to the goddamn health food store and bought a bottle of melatonin.
Mm.
And I got it. I still got it. And guess what it say?
What?
On the label. Made from human pineal tissue.
Oh, shit. And that's it? A bottle of melatonin?
A bottle of melatonin say it's coming from human pineal tissue on the bottle.
I'm going to look that shit up. I know they still sell that shit. Ooh.
They still sell that shit, and I got it before they stopped selling that line. They put it on the bottom.
Mm.
And I got it in my cabin, and I said, I ain't never taking no goddamn melatonin. I don't want to eat my brothers and sisters and shit.
Mm.
And that's some real shit. And I know from the science of it that you can't get the amount of melatonin needed for a dose from no damn cows or no other animal forms. It has to come from black niggers.
Eating niggas. Oh.
Eating niggas. This is Soylent Green, people.
Okay.
Mixed with the invading of body snatchers.
Hold it. Hey, wait a minute. Because you. I'm about to. Oh, shit.
Hold on, man.
That's the shit I don't want to on the visualize, man. I'm just fucking my head up right now. Shit.
I know. That fucked me up. I got the bottle in my cabinet now.
Oh, wait, I'm going to slow down, because I was drinking rum, man. That shit making my head spin. What the fuck?
I know.
Oh, my goodness, man. That's some fucking
And that
shit.
Ain't even the half of it. That's just the pineal tissue.
You know,
they've been using the abortions for the facials and shit and for Botox and all that shit for years. They're using stem cell. That's what the stem cell research is really about. How do we grow some niggers without having to answer to any political shit? This is coma. They tell us in these movies, but we so dumb, we think it's just a movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, the father of gynecology, of OBGYN, that cracker was doing the Mississippi appendectomy on all them sisters in the South. Giving them opium and taking out their ovaries and cutting on their damn uterus and doing
eight, nine
surgeries of the same shit.
Wasn't this guy, he worked with the Nazis?
Yeah, and he was the leader of the American Medical Association, and he did not retire until the 80s.
Yeah. I kind of heard about that guy.
It never ended. In fact, none of their programs they started on us ever ended. COINTELPRO still going?
Yeah.
All that shit. Operation Fuck That Nigga Up?
Exactly. Damn.
So they ain't playing.
Oh.
And we seem to think that this is a game.
Well, a lot of us realize a lot of us know it's real, but we're like, okay, somebody keeps putting it in my head. It's like, you know, we know it's a game, but it's like, hey, look, Dr. Anderson, I also heard him say it too. It's like you got a lot of us thinking, hey, this is how it's always been. And, you know, the niggas ain't never been nothing. We ain't never been nothing. We ain't never done nothing. And, you know, so more you got more of that idea pushed out here. You can't go open nobody's mind up to reality in the world or what's happening on the other side of the planet or that the other side of the planet even fucking exists. You don't fucking know. You just know that TV and that bullshit is happening in the hood.
You ain't lying. I've been trying since 91.
I mean, I've seen people that, man, you know, they get a little chance to go ahead and get out and do some stuff, man. And it's like here, you know, like Chicago, man. Yeah, motherfuckers, they if they go to the South Side, it's like a major journey, man. It's a major trip. Like, well, I'm going out south.
Hey, I'm from Joliet. I understand exactly what you're saying.
I'm like, what the fuck, man? Get out
Wait
of
a
here.
Minute. We didn't even go to Chicago last. We went to Brookfield Zoo or some shit.
Yeah, I mean, like, hey, man, you packing lunch and all that crazy shit. I'm like, man, get the fuck on, man. That's crazy. I mean,
a 20-minute drive, nigga.
Yeah, man. I mean, shit. Pack your shit up and fuck it. If you told me you got in the car and you drove to Belize, now, nigga, you driving. Shit, the fuck.
I know. We don't get off the block. Unless we go on to pay for something that crackers made, we'll travel 18 miles, 18 million miles for that shit.
And there's some. Like, oh, damn, hold on. You got any more?
I took a cruise to Belize and to the Western Caribbean.
Right.
And
right.
Lo and behold, the niggas on the boat, none of them went on the excursion to the ancient pyramid site or the ruins.
Tell me where they went.
To the casino. They stayed on the ship and went to the casino and to the bar.
Okay, wait. You know, I got to kind of defend them on that. Okay, hold on.
Don't you defend them.
Hold on. Okay, well, I went to Kenya, right? And everybody's like, hey, you going out there on a safari? We're going to go out there. I was like, hell no. Look at all these motherfucking windows. It was a lot of women over there in the casino. I was like, shit, I ain't leaving this. Fuck that. And then from the casino, I was in the club. So I was like, fuck, I ain't going out to see all them wild animals. I mean, you going out there with them animals. Yeah, it's a lot of motherfuckers out there. And see, I can't compromise. Like, look here, homie. Don't chew my ass up. I'll give you this $100 bill if you don't chew my ass up.
You ain't lying. You ain't lying. And they have open vehicles and shit trying to see a damn line.
So if I'm in the city, I mean, look here, man. Don't take my wallet. Just leave me a little cash, man. Here, take this. Okay, well, fuck it, take it out. I can replace that. That's a little bit easier. Then a motherfucker took a chunk out of my ass out there in the jungle. Out there. That shit. So, man, I kind of defend him on that, man, because I stay very...
But let me tell you,
man,
something. Ain't no damn
man.
Wild animal. Ain't no damn wild animals in Belize.
Fuck that. Shit.
A monster, a goddamn little lizard, and a monkey.
Fuck,
a monkey. I don't
know. I wouldn't
That's
take no chance.
A monkey and a lizard.
You got trees and shit. You don't know what's out there, man. Shit, I was in the fucking
That's
army. I hated that shit when I was in the army. I said, man, what is the fuck is crawling out here, man? What the fuck is
What's that noise?
That noise. Always, man. What the hell? This is bullshit. I can't wait to get home. Man, look at this shit, man. Yeah, man, so you don't know what the fuck is out there, man. Yeah, man.
But
I'll
tell you something else, though. You know, I'm a book man. I sell books. And so, of course, you know, I'm on a cruise ship. Where I'm going to go? To the ship library, of course, right?
Mm-hmm.
See what they got on that mug. I go in the library, and guess who I found in there?
Huh?
A group of fucking Mormons studying the Olmec Mayan writing. They know who we are. We the only ignorant fucks that don't.
And that's some hard shit there, boy. That ain't easy
they
to deal with.
They were studying Mayan and Olmec hieroglyphs, learning how to speak and shit.
So they can go ahead and control the message.
I was the only nigga in the Mormon group sitting in on it. You know I sat in on that shit.
So they can go ahead and control the message again and reroute the message once more.
Exactly. The message, they already knew who the fuck it was. That's why their name is Mormon.
Oh, man, that's some crazy shit.
They knew who it was. They just hell-bent on making sure you don't find out. The other thing is this. They got all the genealogy records on the niggas here.
Yeah,
and they ain't published them. They ain't
published them. What I saw, somebody, you know, just a couple of people have put it in my head several times, that I think Mormon was the one religious group who owned the most slaves.
Exactly.
I'm like, what the fuck? What the fuck?
Exactly. Second
well,
only
been,
to the Jews.
They've been bigots and racist for a long time.
Big time. And they know what they're doing. They stole the artifacts in Utah of the Anasazi people. They're also here in Colorado and New Mexico, the Four Corner State. And they've been sitting on that shit, and that's the deal they got with the government. The government leave their ass alone as long as they don't expose the shit they got on us. They in cahoots.
Well, you know, that's our problem. See, you know,
so damn religious.
What? Yeah, that is a big problem. That's a bigger problem.
The Christian sensibility. Let me say that. You got a Christian, Cretan, idiot in the Alps with a stupid, obtuse person sensibility.
You know, Claude Anderson is talking about it. A lot of people are talking about it. I mentioned it. Anyway, everybody tried to. Some people try to mention it about the nationhood, nation building. But one thing Claude Anderson was talking about was how it was cutting off. How do you put it? He said all the other groups can go ahead and bring somebody else in, but we can't. And the thing that he didn't connect with that is that, you know, we can't go ahead and bring any more. Then we no more Africans can come over here. There's a lot of restrictions for Africans to come to the U.S. It's a lot of bullshit because I don't ever remember no U.S. no African country declaring war on the U.S. So, but Europeans have declared war on the U.S. and they can come here almost with no fucking problem. But he didn't connect that part. And I wish he had go ahead and emphasize that a little bit more in that video. What's the problem? Why we can't go ahead? Why we can't go and connect with the brothers and sisters on the continent? And the reason why is to go ahead and have us make us have that disconnect with the brothers and sisters on the continent. Because you got a lot of people, a lot of brothers and sisters in Africa call us them, and a lot of people in the U.S. go ahead and call Africans them. So it's a fucked up ass thing when you go ahead and look at it. Because you ain't gonna get no Europeans going ahead denying the European brethren.
Right, and you have to look too, Chef Rob. It's on the books, on the law against importing Africans to America. So while they tell you they stole your ass from Africa, they restricted the flow of Africans since colonial times.
Right.
For the
right.
same reason that they're not telling you, because you couldn't distinguish a nigger Native American from an African.
Right.
And
so
that's
why
they kept that shit closed.
And it's still closed to this day, and
exactly.
A lot of us don't realize it. And what I was seeing was a lot of brothers and sisters may not agree with an indigenous brothers and sisters that was born in Africa. They may not agree with them socially, but they have a little bit more of what I would consider culture. I don't think we have a culture. So I think in order for us to develop a sense of culture, we need to go ahead and look at some of the models that they have in Africa. Because what we have now is pretty much cutthroat. You know, take from everybody else and disrespect everybody and treat people that look like you like shit. You know, that's fucked up.
But you're right. I agree. We do have a culture. We just have been it's been beaten out of our mind. Because what people don't understand is, when they started putting the red man on reservations, the black folks who were Indians refused to go on the reservation. And so because of that, we were relabeled Negro, along with a lot of them other people relabeled Negro. And so we just don't know the flow of the labels, and we really don't understand that they stole our land from under our feet right here. And that's why we keep fighting the wrong fight, and that's why we won't get no love, and that's also why ain't no Africans ever came over here to save our ass. Not a one.
Yeah, that
they don't remember your ass. You've been over here so goddamn long. We still Africans, but we've been over here so damn long. They're like, what Africans?
You know, Paul Mooney said it pretty good. I also had a discussion with some lady at the doctor one day. I had a medallion on a little, this thing was like it was the continent of Africa.
Are you? I used to make them. I know what you're talking about. I used to make them and paint them. The
so I went into. Yeah, I'm gonna talk to you about that, man, because I need some more of those. I was in there, and she was like, "Why do you have that on? You're an American." And I remember what Paul Mooney said. He said, "Hey, look, if you take a giraffe out of Africa and put it in Canada, is it no longer an African giraffe?" And then when I told her that, she just went back down and kept on reading. I said, "You fucking white." So that shit kind of pissed me off, but I was cool with it about that. Shut her up.
You know what pissed me off when I was making the medallions back in my late teens?
Yeah.
I was making them, and they were smoking. I had everybody's flag on there and shit. You know, I had the red, black, and green, the red, green, gold. I had all that shit. My brothers be like, what's that, Texas?
like, no, you dumb nigga. Texas don't look nothing like this.
Oh, my goodness, man. Now, that's real.
It made me feel like the Ice Cube song. I heard you both had the same bank account. Dumb nigga, what you thinking about?
Hold on, man.
No, that's crazy.
Oh, that's fucked up, man.
And if you want to know the state of Black America, we don't have a damn state. That's the state.
Right. Well, then, you know what? Well, according to what you just told me, them motherfuckers don't know what a state.
You ain't even, man. Some of these people don't even know the difference between a county, a city, and a state.
What's the state? This is a continent, you dumb fucker. What the hell? See that, man? It should be legal.
And don't ask a nigga their nationality. They're going to refer to fucking local grocery stores and shit to give you their nationality.
How the hell, man, that shit is sad, man.
I'm Kroger. I'm King Supers. I'm Safeway.
I had people tell me just stay straight. No, my people come from Cleveland. You know, when this brother told me that shit, man, I ain't know what the fuck to say, man.
What can you say? Where do you start?
Yeah.
It's like, damn, nigga, I got to fucking go back to the embryo stage with your ass.
Yeah, you know how you feel when you stand there talking to somebody who got bad breath? You be like, ooh, you feel like your eyebrows on fire. You're like, what the fuck?
And you feel like you're trapped in a prison.
Right. And that's what I felt when he fucking do that shit at me. I was like, man, this motherfucker burning my face. You stupid motherfucker. What? I ain't know what to say, man. I just turned away and didn't say a damn thing else, man. I couldn't. Oh, never forget that shit.
What can you do? And so this is my point, too, is that we are African people. However, we had a different name before it was called Africa. And we were in America before niggas were shipped out of Africa or out of Spain, to be more specific, in North Africa. And so if we want to ever really be African, we got to connect the way we got here. We can't jump across the water because a cracker said you from Nigeria.
Wait. Hold on, bro. Hold on. You know, the problem with that is just like that motherfucker told me he was from Cleveland. He was telling me he don't want to hear shit beyond Cleveland.
You ain't lying.
I mean,
he don't want to hear shit.
You know, it's people that go ahead and know the story, but they don't like, nah, man, it's time to forgive and forget. Nigga, look at where you live. This is by design.
Forget the estate great-grandma left you. Yeah, fuck that estate.
Yeah, right.
I got
right.
Me a white girl.
Yeah, you know, hey, you know, motherfuckers. And one of the fools that was telling me something recently, man, working in the barbershop, man. I'm like, man, this is fucking crazy, man.
See, that at the barbershop is the last land of entrepreneurial idiots. Because you go in a barbershop, you're going to find more ignorance than you'll find on a plantation.
Yeah. Oh, I'm glad you said it that way, man. I was trying to be nice.
Now remember, I sell books, so I used to go to the barbershop. So they got me to the point where I don't want to see none of them niggas no more. I got locked. I don't even go to the barbershop. Fuck that.
Oh, man. Yeah, man. It's like that. And this one shop, it's like this. Three brothers and this one Mexican dude, right? And the one brother being there.
Wait, that don't even sound right. A Mexican dude in the barbershop? Okay,
I don't live in Chicago. I live in the suburbs, okay? So they partner
we
up.
You want to cut him with ice? Okay, got you. Go ahead.
They partner up out here, okay? So, you know, it's a little different out here. But it's one brother in there always talking ignorant, always got a way to glorify the violence and the negative shit, man. And every time I come in there, he can't wait to go ahead and grab the remote for the TV to put on fucking music videos all day. The two other brothers is in there, and then the Mexican dude be always trying to tell him, hey, man, leave it on the, you know, they was talking about the news and what's going on. And this guy was like, that shit ain't important. He said that. If that shit ain't important, so he gonna put on some important shit, don't put on fucking music video. I'm like, what the fuck?
Man. That's
how people. Yeah, that's what we're dealing with, man. And then he makes a big deal about what's going on in the videos. Look at what they got. This guy doing. I'm like, man, boy, you don't know how stupid you sound.
Well, you know
so
what?
Every now and then I get into it with him.
Them the cousins that have no hairline. Their hairline started their eyebrows. You don't tell them how you related to.
Yeah. I don't know what fucking planet they came from.
I don't know that nigga. I don't know.
I don't know him. Yeah, man. But you know the crazy part is when he talked. I mean, the place when I come in, they be packed, and it's usually one or two motherfuckers in there who agree with him. But the ones who agree with him are usually his customers. So I'd be like, yeah, y'all stupid bastards, stick together, y'all stupid motherfuckers.
Stupid
as hell, man.
You know,
let me play a quick track, man.
Huh?
Let me play a quick track and come back real quick and then take a quick break.
All right.
Tell me, say you have something to tell me. No, you see me right now, please tell me. You can't deny my love. You can't deny my love. Sexy Italia, come sing for me.
Moment of honesty. Someone's gotta take the lead tonight. Is it gonna be?
Make sure.
I'm gonna sit right here and tell you.
Wondering, maybe, could I make you my baby? If we do, then you'll think about what sexy, hi Tanya.
Greetings, welcome back to the Chef Wob Show. Hey brother, let me ask you a quick question.
Go ahead.
Get some closing thoughts from you also. So, you know, in that piece with Claude Anderson, and he was talking about the industries and how, you know, what he was building. You know, I was looking, trying to find, you know, where he stand today, because I don't see very much about what's going on with him today. So I would assume they're still doing stuff. So I think the next phase for me is to go ahead and try to do some research and get a representative from that camp to come over here and talk.
From where is this again?
From the Claude Anderson people, you know, because remember he's talking about all the industries, the fish farming, and he said how.
Yeah,
and you know, and I never.
I heard.
Go ahead. I never.
The last
heard.
I heard, he does have the fish.
Go ahead, bro. Go ahead. I'll keep going. Go ahead.
He does have the fishery, the last I heard.
Okay. Okay. But when he gave that, when he gave that pretty much, he said that, hey, look, black folks consume the most seafood in America. I was like, wow, the most fish in America? You know, I think about that. And if you think about it, yeah, we do. But black people only consume a certain kind of fish. It's not a variety. I'm not hearing about the halibuts and shit like that.
You're right.
So, we get I'm not hearing about some, you know, stuff like that. Shark fin soup, some shit. So, but yeah, you know, but it is a good business. Because I was looking at like near my mom's house. Near my mom's house, there's this fish market over there. It's a fish market, and they also, you know, they sell cooked fish, and they give you fish by the pound, fresh fish, right? And you can pick out what you want right there. They have it, and they'll cook it for you. Man, the prices in this place is ridiculous, man. I don't know how they stay. I don't know how they stay there. It's like some kind of fucking front for some other bullshit, man. I don't know how they stay in business. The door's been open for a long time with these high-ass prices. They just went up on their prices.
Damn.
Man, I don't remember. I can't give you an example, but it was just shocking just to see. I was like, fuck. So, and just like the one of this my shows this past week, I was talking about how I saw the catfish. Man, it was like $5.99 a pound, man. I was like, God damn. And then I think it was Tracy. She was saying, hey, look, it's $3.99 by our house, man. I'm trying to figure out why this shit's so fucking high.
Because you buying it? That was a throwaway fish for fish connoisseurs.
You know what, man? I'm going to take that. This is how, you know, what you just said, this is how I'm going to take it. I'm buying it. You know, you stupid fucker, you should be growing your own shit. That's how I took it.
Now, that's intelligence.
Oh, man, yeah, you're right, man, yeah.
And I'll say this, too, that when you have a fishery,
right,
you also create the possibility of capturing the sales from all the fishers. There's a lot of black men and women who love to fish, who actually love to go and catch the fish.
You know
and
what,
that's
bro?
The industry.
Man, you know what? I'm about to get this space, right? And I wasn't even thinking about it, man. But this, I could go ahead and this concrete room, man. I could go ahead and put an indoor fishery, man. Yeah.
Right.
That, man. Oh, man, motherfuckers. You know, I got some other problems, man. So that kind of like, you know, when you got some other stuff blocking you, it's stopping you from thinking about reality and trying to make it. Shit.
I know, and that's what it's designed for.
God damn.
At least you ain't got Xbox stopping you.
Xbox. No, you know, actually, I got a PlayStation. But I don't know. I mean, this motherfucker collecting dust, man. I really don't fuck with it that much.
And once you master the game, okay, now what?
I mastered it. Well, I say, let's gamble. God damn it, get some more motherfuckers playing. Like, hey, man, fuck it. I mean, let's take this to this level here. like I said, man, when I was in Mombasa, man, when I was in Kenya, it was like, going on a safari, we going out there and ride on elephants. I was like, man, get on them animals. I mean, shit, I'm from Chicago. I see wild dogs running down the street all the fucking time. You don't see me trying to put no rope around their goddamn neck. Don't be bothered with these. And if you grab one of these goddamn dogs, you risk them biting you in the goddamn throat. So imagine a goddamn 600-pound, 1,000-pound fucking lion run up on your ass. Fuck, I'm going to
be a hyena.
I seen this shit where a hippopotamus will run and chew your ass up.
Sure will. And a little hyena will chew your ass up.
Yeah, so what the hell are we out there trying to go and fuck with these animals for? I mean, I'm used to the urban jungle.
And you know what? You got common sense like the Kenyans that live there. They ain't running around there fucking with them animals.
Yeah, I mean, but not urban. I mean, the concrete jungle. I'm used to the concrete jungle. I'm used to that kind of shit. You know how rough it is in the city. You're right. They wouldn't be going out there. These cats was laughing at them. They said, no, man. You go out there, man, it's bad. That's for the bush people. No. They stand in the city. It's hustlers and every damn thing in this goddamn Mombasa, man. Same motherfuckers. It's hustlers and every. If you walk going Madison on the west side or 79th Street or something like that, Cottage Grove, you know, one of these streets over in Chicago, and you see hustlers, people trying to go and say that, pickpockets. And I saw the same shit when I was over there. I said, man, this shit look too much different.
Nothing. And you know, Kenya is controlled by the British. I'm sure you learned that when you was over there.
Yeah, I did. You know, you got some motherfuckers that just still love them. Like, it's crazy. I want to tell you about some other, I don't want to say it, but it is some.
And they don't see no racial problem.
Say that again?
I said they don't see no racial problems. They think Americans just got a problem with race.
You know what? No, they don't. A lot of them don't, but it's a few that do. It's a few that do. And the few that do are like ostracized somewhat, man.
Exactly. Just like us over here. The few that
see it. Yeah, it is.
By the Christians. And they're also a Christian nation.
Yeah, it's the same. Because too many times motherfuckers tell me, family members, man, like, what's wrong with Rob? Rob, don't talk to Rob. Rob has got some Robs.
I be hearing that. Sound like Sankofa when Shola was sleeping, and that sister said, she don't sound right.
Say that again?
In the movie Sankofa, one of the sisters was trying to listen to the Maroon speaking over the bushes, and the other sister was like, they don't sound right. Let's go.
Oh, yeah. That movie Sankofa, man. You know the part, it's a few parts in that I was really ticked off on. But when the sister was getting raped, man, oh, my goodness.
Awful. And they showed that part, but they didn't show his head rolling up.
I was sitting on my couch, man, and the remote was too far away, man. I was like, get the way. I kept seeing so much of it. And then when I got the remote, I dropped it, and I kept seeing.
that was some monstrous ball shit.
Man, somebody should have warned me about that part coming up. Because I ain't feel too good about that part. I was like, what the fuck? Hey! That shit really fucked my head up. I got to find that damn thing, man. Shit.
Mm.
Yeah, some people need to see that shit, man. That shit was real fucked up, brother.
Her man was up there locked up in that wood and shit.
Man, the whole thing was fucked up, man. Shit. And I was thinking, I saw... what was that shit? Oh man, what was that damn the one with the ship?
Amistad? Was it Amistad with Amahansu or Ill-Gotten Gains? You know, he did two of them.
I think it was Amistad. You know, I never seen that whole movie Amistad, but the part I saw, man, because I knew some of the story and I read some of the shit before, and I didn't really want to go ahead and fucking just watch the movie. But the part that I saw, a couple of parts, one of the parts that I saw was when The white dude was described, it took a bunch of white folks to a slave ship, a ship that they had, they were bringing slaves over. And the white people, when they got close, they started putting the handkerchiefs on their mouths and on their nose and shit. Man. You know, and I tried to go ahead and think about that. And every time I hear this, they got like a slave ship display. They may have some sounds and all else. They don't have that stink. They need that smell of death, shit, and vomit. You know, really get a real feel of it.
And the problem is this, Chef Rob. Crackers smell like that anyway. They was covering their nose with them handkerchiefs for they self, not for them niggas.
Oh, man.
They smell like that now.
Fucking bad.
And you know they wasn't taking no bath back then. Come on.
Yeah, because...
That's against their culture.
Here's something that a lot of us, another little thing a lot of us is looking over. When you look at stuff like the Black Plague and all this other shit, some of the shit that was killing so many people around the planet, but it really wasn't around the planet. It was every place that Europeans were living or had been to.
Right.
And I seen this in flash, right? Or like, I went to like the MSN page, or what was it, MSN or World News. It was either one of those. And it was the first thing that popped up was the 10 deadliest plagues in the world. And I noticed that it was each one of them was that white people had either been there first, or been there, or living there, or either had been or hadn't been in touch with the people. But none of them damn plagues, none of that shit was in Africa. It was either in... Most of them were in Europe, a couple of them were in Asia, and I think one was in India.
That's right.
And it was like, I think it was like, it had like 11 of them. I was like, God damn, see, motherfuckers, y'all need to pay attention to that shit, man.
And if you read Blacks in Science, Ancient and Modern by Von Sertima, there's accounts in that book, and he cites the sources, so there's more accounts than just in that book. Of no instances of any venereal disease in Africa when they arrived, when the cracker arrived. None.
It brought all of that.
And it was so deep that when the crackers struck a couple of them and gave them the disease, them niggas got cured with no treatment.
That's deep, there.
That's some deep shit.
That's damn. Damn, that's something to think about.
When they talk about how funky we was, they full of shit. They ass was stinking on the boat. We were enslaved, so we couldn't even cover our nose from their stink.
Yeah, because you constantly read about the hygiene level and things they were doing. And all that other shit, man. That shit was crazy, man.
And they still let the dogs sit at the dinner table. They ain't changed a bit.
Yeah, that really ain't cool. You ain't supposed to be. And that was the thing. That's the thing I saw. I think it was on that Hidden Colors joint, man. The dude was talking about how the Moors came up there and told them, hey, look, you shouldn't be having the animals in the slide here where you sleep. Shouldn't be sleeping inside. They need to be outside.
That's where the lights first jumped on board. And that's why they still with them.
Fuck y'all doing, so that's why I know from like, being in the service, white boys is always talking about fucking sheep and all that shit, man.
And please, let's not forget the Mexicans. They white too. And they fucking donkeys and they little boys and sisters and brothers and uncles and aunts and mothers. I was working at a shelter here in Denver once.
Right.
For a runaway team or for displaced teams, whatever they call it. And we had this one that had to be line of sight. We had like 14 people in the shelter.
So we had to keep this little motherfucker in the office. There was a bedroom behind the office, so we had to lock him in that motherfucker because he was a sex offender. And do you know what this motherfucker got arrested for or brought in there for?
What?
He was fucking his mama and his grandma.
Really?
And when we asked him, you know, we do a little interview and shit. What do you want to do when you get older? I want to be a porn star.
Wow. Wow. His
Mexican.
And his grandmother?
And grandma. And wait a minute. That was about 15 years ago. About 5 years ago, I was a family
advocate.
How old
was he when he was doing that?
13.
Oh, my goodness.
And wait a minute. That ain't the half of it. I was an advocate for juvenile justice, mental health children in the system. The last one I came across.
Wait.
You know I'm going to take it there, Chef Rob. You know I'm going to take it there.
Oh, shit, man. Good old fuck. His mother and his grandmother. That's fucking crazy, man. Get the fuck out of here.
No, it wasn't. That was normal. That's normal Catholic behavior.
Right,
we don't want crazy thinking it's crazy.
Oh shit. Oh man.
But this other little Mexican I was working with about 5 years ago, you know, I've been going to their house and stuff, and they got all these chihuahuas. They don't seem like the big dogs, they're like the little ones. And so I go over to their house and the grandma pulls me to the side, she said, John, you know, that fake name I had. My grandson's been fucking the dog.
Really?
I grabbed up my shit and left. I didn't say shit. I'm like, I didn't come over here for this shit. You better call the psychiatrist, like Ricky Ricardo would say and shit. I don't know what the fuck to tell you.
Damn.
And this is normal behavior.
Damn. She pulled you to side.
He's fucking the dog. I'm like, what?
Man, that spooked the shit out of me. I left too. I'm like, oh, what? Yeah.
I packed up my shit. I got to go. I got to go. I'll talk to you another day. I don't even know if I can talk to you again. That's the type of shit niggas to quit. Like, I will rather flip burgers at McDonald's. Fuck this shit.
Ooh, shit, that'll fuck me. I'm like, you really? Oh, yeah. I'm going to call y'all in a minute.
and then go to Texas somewhere and never see your ass again. Hold on just a minute. I'll be back.
Yeah, I'll be right back. Yeah, I'm going to run out to the... You want something? Ooh, shit, I've been gone.
No leave like daddy went to get some cigarettes and shit.
Yeah.
That nigga never came back.
Hey, I'm going to tell you what my next door neighbor used to do when he used to go ahead. This fool used to creep away from his wife. One day me and my brother, it was like one Sunday morning, we was going to go to my other brother's house and go watch a football game. So we can hear this dude, the neighbor, I can hear my neighbor go ahead and say, hey, babe, I'm going to get a newspaper. Like, damn. I mean, this motherfucker go get a newspaper every Sunday morning. One day, you know, me and my brother used to always go to, we get together and go to my other brother's house on Sunday morning, watch the football games a bunch of times. But this one particular day, we heard him say he's going to get a newspaper. We didn't think nothing of it. So we went around the corner to the liquor store. But we can see this motherfucker duck going down the alley, going over there getting the hookers and going to this fucking abandoned house. And didn't get no newspaper. He'd be going ahead and fucking the hookers in the abandoned house, in the abandoned garage. So we watched this motherfucker, man. A couple of weeks went by, and we hear him say the same shit. And when we leave, we see that motherfucker getting another goddamn hooker, get on into the fucking garage. So we got to watch out, motherfuckers telling you they're going to get a newspaper.
I'm trying to tell you. or even if they say they're going to work.
Yeah. I'm going to get
and the thing is, see, the thing you have to understand about the Christian sensibility, particularly the Catholic Christian sensibility, is they are based on emotional hyperness and contradiction. They have to be contradictory and liars. Because they can go to church and say, Jesus wept. I did my Hail Marys. I rubbed my rosary beads. I kissed the Pope's ring. He poked me. I'm good.
Shit. That shit crazy as hell, man.
That's some sick ass shit. And we let them run the world.
Unchallenged. No opposition whatsoever. Hey, brother. I'm about to wrap this up, man. You got any final thoughts, brother?
Yeah, just the final thought of niggas got to wake up. If we need an ethnicity, let's create the ethnicity of niggas. Everybody seems to know what that is already. Let's nationalize the ethnicity of niggas, tie it back into the nigger that was the first occupants of America called Patala, and then we could get somewhere. Let's organize our businesses. Let's organize our school system on some nigga shit.
Some nigga shit. Shit, that might work.
No, I know.
Thanks, brother. That might work. All right, brother. Peace.
All right, hotel.